Hey guys, it is lucky number 13, episode 13 of the 51 yard line.
Nice.
I am one of your hosts, Tyler Berry. To my left, Drew Weilers.
I haven't been called that since like second grade B team basketball.
I have no idea why I called you that.
That's okay, but it has happened before. Thanks for listening, guys.
And to my other left, I don't even want to call him a guest host anymore. I guess we'll just call you our series regular.
Series regular.
Christian.
Promoted, I'm honored.
Christian, what's up, buddy? Well, it's like you're not on every episode, but you're on more episodes than you're off. So it's like you're a series regular.
I'm like Saul in Breaking Bad. I'm not on everyone,
exactly.
But I
pop. What's the name of the dude that would come in on Cheers, the con man? He would always come in. He'd be like at the opening of episodes sometimes, and he occasionally have like a couple episodes where he's like the central character. You know what I'm talking about? You watch Cheers.
I didn't watch Cheers.
I don't watch Cheers.
That guy.
Well, that's cool.
To anybody who's listening, somebody please comment when we post this episode and tell me the character's name. I'll probably Google it after this, but please post so then Christian can know who he is on Cheers.
Hey, no, Cheers went into syndication, so I'm honored by the comparison.
Or everyone just go to Netflix and watch it.
You guys really need to watch
it. I know I should.
It's
amazing.
I did watch Frasier, so I should get on Cheers.
I watched Frasier. I also watched Wings. Wings
was
a great show.
Oh, that's right. Wings. I've seen a couple episodes.
Right.
A couple episodes of Wings.
Steven Weber.
I have not watched. I've only watched a couple episodes of Frasier.
Nope.
It's pretty damn good.
But that's not why we're here.
We are not here for
Frasier. You mean we're not here to talk 90s television?
I don't think so.
Oh, maybe we should do that on a different
podcast. We probably could do that.
Guys, we're here to talk sports, as we always are. Clearly we have a lot to get into. Clearly I'm flustered. Clearly I've been drinking and watching March Madness.
I was getting
all day.
A lot of March
Madness.
So
we're going to get into a lot of that later, but first, Drew Weilers has something he wants to talk about.
Yes.
What's up, my dude?
I was hoping to talk a little bit about hit the homer button a little bit and talk a little bit of Viking football. Not a lot of big splashes in usually we haven't really been a team to splash, as it were, in free agency. There's not too many big. I mean, outside of Brett Favre, and then I
comes
guess
to mind.
I mean that was a big one, but I think that was. I mean, that wasn't really free agency. Like he literally came
right.
out of retirement.
Right,
he wasn't gonna play for anyone else. You
sure.
know, it's not like he was being courted by other squads.
You pulled him from the earth.
No, that's pretty much. We went on down to Hattiesburg where he was chucking footballs to high schoolers and asked
and
him if he
dick
wanted
picks to high schoolers.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
that was cool.
Adults.
I mean, you know, I. Barely legal, right? Get her before the hair does. That we might have to edit out.
Ooh.
That one we might have to edit out. Sorry, Mom. But outside of Brett Favre and then Antoine Winfield and Pat Williams, mm-hmm. Not lots of big free agencies sort of deals. We've had some big trades, obviously Jared Allen. But I thought we made a little bit of a splash in trading for Mike Wallace in this free agency period.
Yeah.
Gave up, I believe it was a fifth rounder, and then got Wallace in a seventh rounder.
Right.
So,
right.
That's
not bad. That's
I thought that was pretty good. Seeing as how Wallace is technically only, he only has 1 year on his deal, and we'd only have to pay him for this year. So we can, essentially, he's on a 1 year prove it deal off of free agency.
Run.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's like you show up. And you show us that you still have the burst and the explosiveness and that you work well with Teddy and that you're not going to be a big baby in the locker room. There's room for you here. I'm super excited about it for Teddy.
I think that's right. Really, I think it's a good pickup. It's clearly someone who can catch the deep ball. My one question for you is, I know you were telling me the other day that like they've been, like Teddy's been wanting to schedule like an off-season, just like off-the-record workout with his wide receivers. Do you know if Mike Wallace has been approached to be a part of that?
I don't know if he's been approached yet. They've been out here in SoCal working out, like I was telling you guys before the show. And then Teddy said, I believe I saw it on Twitter, on my Bleacher Report team stream.
Mm-hmm.
I saw something on my Twitter about how he was, Teddy was talking about, Zimmer said that he had been in contact with Teddy a little bit. And they said soon Teddy was going to be bringing all the receivers down to his hometown in South Beach or near South Beach, and he was going to be going through the playbook and going through routes and getting chemistry and timing and those sorts of things down. So, I'm super excited about it. I think it would super behoove Mr. Wallace to get down there. Yep. If he still has the speed and Teddy can get right with the deep ball.
Yep.
Oh, man.
That's a big weapon.
And see, that's the thing. Is like, Wallace played okay last year.
When he got the ball.
When he got the ball and playing out of a system that he normally doesn't play in. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. Philbin seems to be setting up a Miami Dolphins offense where he runs a little read option, but most of the stuff is quick hitting. You got Charles Clay getting involved. You got Lamar Miller getting involved. Right. Tannehill's sort of spreading the ball out, but there's not a lot of deep shots down the field. That's what Wallace does.
Right.
That's what his bread and butter was when he was in Pittsburgh, flying down the field a million miles an hour and letting Big Ben chuck him one and go and get it. There's not many guys that are as fast as Mike Wallace. He's pretty lickety-split in going 0 to 100.
Absolutely.
So getting him in a Norv Turner-based offense where you're trying to go vertical all the time and you're trying to stretch the defense out vertically and it's based upon like hitting different levels in defenses, if you got a guy that can really take defenses deep and Teddy can find a way to get the ball down there accurately with timing stepping up into the pocket, and if you get and I also think part of this move was and it seems to be for not anyways, but it seems to be a way of trying to show Adrian Peterson, look, if we could trade you, we would trade you, but we're not giving you up for nothing.
Right,
like, we're not going to dish you off to a contender if they're not. I've heard the highest Arizona is willing to offer Adrian Peterson is a second rounder.
Right.
I'm not sending him out the door for a second rounder.
Absolutely not.
I'm sending him out the door maybe for 2 second rounders, and then maybe, like, I would like some more help at linebacker. So if they've got, like, some, like, I don't know, mid-tier guy, or like, I don't know, a fifth rounder or something like that. But I'm not sending Adrian Peterson anywhere where he can compete and get a chance to win, and then we get a second rounder. At the end of the day, the guy may be 30. He's still the best running back of this generation.
Right.
And we should be compensated as such for giving up his services.
And his body is basically 29 because he didn't play.
Absolutely,
for a year,
and it sounds like defensive tackle for the we just re-signed our backup defensive tackle Tom Johnson said he was working out with AP and he's like, yeah, dude has not lost a step. He's in the best shape.
I believe it.
Yeah.
So I think that was the other thing is this move was like, all right, look, man, we're trying to bring in guys here, like, and if we can get you in here as well, and we can get you to buy in, which it doesn't sound like he's doing, but if we can get you to buy in. You get the running game going, and you get Teddy throwing the ball down the field to a lot of different guys and spreading the ball out. I'm super excited.
Yeah.
I like it. Now, on the other end of the wide receiver spectrum, you released Greg Jennings.
Yep.
I just want to get your quick thoughts on that. Do you think this Mike Wallace over Greg Jennings is an upgrade, or do you think it's a wash, or how do you feel about it?
I think it's an upgrade. Initially, right off the bat, I was super okay with it. Right away.
Okay.
Because initially, back when Greg Jennings and Mike Wallace were the most coveted free agent wide receivers in their given offseason, I think it was the 2012 offseason. It was the 2011 or 2012 offseason, I don't remember. I wanted Wallace. And the Vikes were actually really close to getting Wallace.
Right.
But Wallace was like, I was just in Pittsburgh for the first part of my career. I'm picking palm trees, you know, I'm picking South Beach. He didn't want to play anywhere cold, so he went. And he played down in Miami. So, I, you know, it was what it was, and then we got Greg. And Greg's been great. Greg's been a great leader in the locker room. You can't really fault him for his first year as a Viking. No one was looking good with Christian Ponder throwing him the football.
Nope.
Nobody was looking good doing that. And it's a little bit disappointing because Not only is he a good leader, but he was starting to really get a rhythm down with Teddy,
right.
And it seemed like they were developing rapport. It's kind of a bummer to cut that short a little bit, but it sounds like the organization approached Greg. They were like, "Look, we want to keep you, but we want to restructure because we want to bring in Mike Wallace. Are you willing to do it?" "No, I'm not willing to do it." "All right, see you later." And then it saved us $5 million in cap room,
right.
So it's totally an upgrade. I think it's completely an upgrade. You get a guy who's faster and younger, and you only have him for 1 year. So if it doesn't pan out, It doesn't hurt anything. I'm not too sure. The Dolphins, he must have really not gotten along with the Dolphins. Because they gave it us
for
really nothing. So either he was such a big pain in the ass in the locker room that they just didn't want to deal with it anymore, or they just felt like he didn't fit in that scheme at all, or both. But either way, I'm happy to have him. I think it's a big upgrade. I'm bummed for some reasons that Greg is gone, but for the most part, it's a total upgrade. I think it. At the end of the day, you're getting a guy who's, like I said, younger, faster, and who's built for this system a little bit better.
Cool. I like it. So I want to get to the big announcement of this week coming out of the National Basketball Association, which is, after a 19-year NBA career, Steve Nash has officially retired.
Ugh. Pour one out.
Seriously, pour one out. Sure. One of the greats, one of the greatest point guards of all time.
Absolutely.
One of the greatest
top 10-ies,
one of the greatest human beings of all time. And definitely one of the greatest Canadian athletes of all time.
For sure. No.
I mean, what can you really say? It's hard.
It had to end the way it ended.
Oh yeah.
His stint
out with a whisper.
Yeah.
Terrible.
His stint in LA did not go the way anyone. Be you an analyst, a fan.
The buses.
Nash. The buses. No one expected it to go the way that it went. But sometimes that's just what happens when you're 39 years old, you sign a 3-year contract, and like there's no guarantee after playing 16 years in this league that you're going to have another 3 years in you.
Right.
And clearly it was clear from the get-go that he didn't. Like, he broke he broke a bone his second game on the Lakers, and then he missed the next 24-25 games, and then just never could get fully back. It's really unfortunate.
I mean,
because he's a fantastic player, and he really could have complimented Kobe in these past couple of seasons.
Yeah, and think about this. The fact that Steve Nash never played a single game in the NBA Finals sucks.
That's
horrible, man. I mean, he's one of the best players. He's got to be one of the best players to never make the Finals.
And you say, like Tyler, you said, it sucks that we never really got to see what it would have been like for him to compliment Kobe. And what I'm about to say, he got the opportunity to compliment Dirk, and we got to see what that was like. But I remember you watched, he had that documentary series about, just the final stretch.
Last
I don't remember
year,
what he called it. But he even sat down with Dirk at one point and talked about what it would have been like had he not left Dallas.
And Dirk basically said, had they had another 2 years, that's a championship team.
Absolutely.
Because think about how close Dirk came without Nash.
And think of what Dirk did without Nash. With a ailing Jason Kidd, and they got a championship against LeBron.
Right, right.
Obviously,
they wrapped it up in 11, but I mean, in the couple of years after Nash left, they were still right there.
And just speaking of the Mavericks years, his years with the Mavericks, I remember being a kid and hopping in my dad's truck with one of my best buds, Ian Anderson, and I think my little brother went as well. A couple times, my dad would take a friend of his, but we would drive up to the Twin Cities, and we would go to the Target Center to watch. We actually got the opportunity to watch a couple playoff games, a couple series games. We got to watch Game 7 of the 2003-2004
this
first round playoffs,
Mavs Wolves.
Ooh,
wow!
It was like Game 7 or Game 6 in our building. One of the best sports atmospheres I've ever been a part of. Outside of me going to the 2009 divisional playoff game against the Cowboys Vikings, that was epic. But oh my gosh, the atmosphere in a building for playoff basketball. Like, me and my little brother went to the Clippers game.
Yeah.
I was into it, but it was the first time that I had ever been in an opposing team's building.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel comfortable. Like, I'm usually
you're
like,
not feeling about the
no.
The hype,
like
right?
I want to like I really want to get into it, and you just the buzz isn't there, and you're not as vocal. You're just more analytical watching.
Right.
But B, like, it's just a regular season 82,
right.
Whatever. NBA basketball game. those playoff games were insane. And the atmosphere was nuts. And you could not deny that the Wolves definitely, as any NBA squad usually does, you know, when they're playing in their own spot in the playoffs, there was a huge, you know, huge crowd factor. And the composure that Nash and Dirk had to wear off the Wolves. I mean, obviously we were, you know, pretty much the inferior team, but I just, the things Nash could do and the things he was doing, not only with Dirk and Michael Finley too.
Yeah.
He was a part of that as well.
Right.
And I just, it was so frustrating.
Yeah.
Because he was so good at distributing and spreading the floor.
And you think about that, I mean, that came before he moved over to the D'Antoni Suns, which is one of the most entertaining, you know, offenses ever. And he won back-to-back MVPs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, people, that was not a great time for the NBA, you know, as far as elite teams and, like, you know, elite MVP seasons. But, I mean, still, back-to-back MVPs and running that offense, that was unbelievable. I mean, he came one Robert Horry forearm shiver away from going to the finals that one year.
And
I mean, I'm
not an elite NBA mind, but Amari Stoudemire was really the only compliment he had, correct? Sean Marion, I suppose.
Marion was really good. I mean, you know, in the later years, he had Grant Hill as
but
a role
I'm,
player.
I mean, he was the guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, who else they had? I think they had Boris Diaw for a while. I think it was Diaw.
You might be right. Yeah.
But that's the thing. We're having to reach for their role players,
and they're, you know, it's, and, you know,
I mean, like, they were still, you know, Western Conference finalists two or three times.
We're not saying Sean Marion's name and Amari Stoudemire's name is a future Hall of Famers. Would you say either one of those guys?
I mean, Amari would Marion, have been, but no he, way. If Amari's injuries hadn't, you know, sabotaged him, it might have been.
I don't think Amari.
And that's
would.
Just what
and,
separates Nash apart.
Not.
And
yeah.
The West is the West. It's always, I'm sorry, even when the Bulls were the Bulls and they were the best team in the nation, I feel like the West was always just so goddamn tough. It always seems to be.
There was
super
only ever
tough.
Like we were talking Jordan Bulls.
Yeah, I'm just saying
they only ever had like one or two teams that could beat them.
Cuz
it
Nash's
was like the
era
Pistons,
was
it was
the
Knicks, it was the Pacers.
2000s.
Those are the only guys who could beat them. And like, or, I mean the Magic. The Magic were good those couple of Shaq years.
But,
yeah.
But then
I mean,
he bounced and went to the he bounced and he was in the West Coast.
Right,
so.
Exactly. And I mean, they you know all the I mean, you think about the teams in the '90s, just pretty attention on the West, like Hakeem, Stockton and Malone, Robinson, you know Kemp and Payton,
physical,
awesome,
very
teams.
physical teams.
Right, right.
No, and I got a question. I'm bummed Steve's not here. In their primes, we were talking about when we were having the point guard discussion. We said pretty confidently that Chris Paul's, we believe, the last pure point guard, like all-around point guard in the NBA.
The NBA seems to be
shifting towards a mostly backcourt, shoot-first kind of deal.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's right. I mean, there are guys, as far as superstars.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Because like I said, there are a few guys who are still doing it, you know, properly. Like a point, like, I mean, like Mike Conley, Marcus Teague. Marcus Teague.
But I'm saying, like, so somebody, like, I guess what I'm getting at
but
is...
But yeah, Paul is the last star.
So in their primes, because I would consider Nash to be that way as well.
Yeah.
Personally. In their primes.
Absolutely.
Pure point guards, Nash or Chris Paul?
Nash.
Yeah.
Nash. I take Nash. Without a question.
Yeah.
Easy. Easily, actually.
I just don't even have to think about it.
Yeah. I'd take Nash.
Sure. I would take Stockton over both of those guys.
Oh yeah, I mean Stockton is Stockton, but you know.
See, like
I'd go Stockton, Nash, Chris Paul, Jason Kidd.
See the thing about, and I'm not trying to knock Stockton as a point guard. He's amazing, but I can't think of Stockton without Malone, whereas I can think of Nash by himself. Yeah. That's the only argument I would take. Where I would say I would take Nash over Stockton.
I mean,
and also, and Stockton had this, but it was mostly Jeff Hornacek, wasn't it? Like, Nash could shoot the three, and he could do it really,
no,
really well.
No, Stockton could shoot, too.
Yeah?
He could shoot.
I remember he could stretch, but I guess I don't remember him shooting a lot from downtown.
The only thing...
I guess he never really had to.
I mean,
I suppose when he did, he probably shot.
I see your point about the Malone thing, but my thing is, like, Stockton never had an opportunity to play without Malone. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
Nash had an opportunity to play without Amari and without Dirk and shifted around from team to team. So, I mean, I don't know what Stockton would have done had he been on a different squad because he always had Malone.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
I mean, I mean, listen, Karl Malone was perfect for him, but I bet he would have done big
as,
time work.
And I guess to go against my own argument, as Dirk was to Nash.
Yeah, no doubt.
Nah, that's super regrettable. I wish he would have stuck around and won a title with Dallas. Yeah. I think he belonged in Dallas. It sucks.
He's one of the few players that is an MVP that doesn't have a title and he deserves it. He's one of only six,
who?
I believe.
I can't even think of an MVP that doesn't have a finals
appearance. Who coached the Mavs? Who was it that coached the Mavs?
Don Nelson?
Was that who it was who they had that commercial of him? Because at one point it seemed like the Mavs had all foreign people. And there was that credit card commercial of him like going around to each player and speaking their like foreign language to coach them.
Oh, I don't know if I remember.
And there was
that
like
one.
At the end of the commercial, he goes up to Nash and he's like, "Hey Nash, how about hustling up a bit, yozer or something like that?"
Right.
Nash is just like looking at him like, "What the fuck are you talking about, dude?" I can't remember. Was it because it was Avery then Carlisle? Who was before Avery?
Nelson.
So it was Nelson. Absolutely.
Right.
Well, I've always been a Steve Nash fan, and I'm sorry to see him go. I did want to read this quote from him from a letter he published, I guess on Saturday, for Derek Jeter's Players Tribune website, which, frankly, I think it's one of the greatest ideas that a player who's retired from a sport has come up with as an aspiring journalist.
Well,
I think it's awesome to have a website where it's all players or former players writing the articles.
Well, and you know that I guess they're wondering if they're like trolling journalists too. Have you seen that by because it's all athletes, they'll be like, they'll put huge titles before said athlete's name, like chief senior analyst of blah blah blah, like to like take digs, I guess, at like specific reporters in the media. Oh no, I think it's awesome. I just didn't know if you guys like heard that. I thought that was super
makes
funny.
Sense.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
That's fine.
Well, regardless, I think that's fantastic. But so Steve Nash wrote, and I quote: "The greatest gift has been to be completely immersed in my passion and striving for something I've loved so much. Visualizing a ladder, climbing up to my heroes. The obsession became my best friend. I talked to her, cherished her, fought with her, and got knocked on my ass by her. And that is what I'm thankful for most in my career, in my entire life in some ways. Obviously, I value my kids and my family more than the game, but in some ways, having this friend, this ever-present pursuit, has made me who I am, taught me, and tested me, and given me a mission that feels irreplaceable. I am so thankful. I've learned so many invaluable lessons about myself and about life, and of course, I still have so much to learn. Another incredible gift."
Ugh.
And that's Steve Nash, man.
That's give that man a ring. My gosh.
Just right. Give that man an honorary ring. He deserves
it. Well, and he, correct me if I'm wrong, he never lived extravagantly. I remember reading about like when he was like a single dude young in the NBA. I remember like, he didn't have a big old mansion, big house. Like, he was just posted up in an apartment.
He was like, just little, like, surfer kid, dude.
Yeah,
like,
he was
fucking,
just chilling,
he skateboards, plays soccer. Like, he just fucks
come out
around.
Of Santa Clara.
What was the slam dunk competition where he got involved as, like, an assister, and he was, like, rainbow kicking, and he, like, was serving it up? Who was his teammate?
I don't remember.
Was it Amari?
No.
Was it Marion?
I don't remember.
Maybe Marion, I'm not sure.
Oh, that was funny. Yeah, he was like rainbow kicking the ball up to that's what that is, right? Where you roll the ball
up
off
the rainbow.
Your ankles.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he'd pass it up to
Right.
Then he did a couple like headers.
Right.
That dude was an athlete.
Boss.
Well, regardless, it's sad to see such a fantastic player to go.
To go the way he did too, that sucks.
Congratulations on an amazing career. It was it was fun to watch. It was fun to grow up watching Steve Nash play.
For sure.
To Nash.
To Nash. Nash,
dude.
Steve Nash, dude. There it is. That's what's up. That's how we do it, the 51-yard line.
Yes, sir.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Moving on, before we get into college basketball, if you guys don't remember from last week, I've instituted a new segment.
Oh, God. Yes.
As I like to call it, 51 questions. Our trivia segment. Basically, every episode, I will ask these fantastic gentlemen, these knowledgeable gentlemen, one sports-related trivia question. You get it right, you get a point. That goes toward your total at the end of 51 questions / 51 episodes. We'll tally up the total, and I don't know, someone will get a free drink or some stupid thing. I don't know. Whatever.
Hey, nothing stupid about a free drink.
Then you know sports.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's important.
But a quick reminder, after 1 week, Drew, Christian, and Steve, who is not here this evening, they are all tied with 1 point. I posed tonight's question to Steve. He already got it wrong, so he is out of the running for another point tonight. So it is down to you two to see if someone gets a point.
Alrighty. Time to move up higher in the premiership.
Exactly. So, tonight's question, which I'm going to go ahead and say, if you guys can answer right away, go for it. If you can't, I will give you till the end of the episode to answer. But I assume that you both are going to get it. The question is, in 1990, two major league greats made baseball history by becoming the first father-son duo to hit back-to-back homers in an MLB game.
I think I got this one.
One more time. In 1990, two major league greats made baseball history by becoming the first father-son duo to hit back-to-back homers in an MLB game. Who is that father-son duo?
I'll take a shot at it.
Go for it. I think I got
all
mine.
You?
It's the Griffies.
Yeah. I'd say Griffies,
is that
too.
Your answer, too?
Yeah. Yeah.
It is indeed Ken Griffey Sr. and Ken Griffey Jr. That is a good job, guys. That's fantastic.
There was also
Griffey's. Talk about another guy who went unfulfilled.
No, that guy is such a sweet swing.
We could talk about hours. Right, we could talk about
that's the most beautiful game of baseball ever. Griffey.
Why can't I not think of his name?
Barry Bonds.
He played on the Cubs for a while. In the
Sosa?
No, not Sosa.
Fuck Sosa.
Like, I'm just thinking about guys who
deserve.
I just think about guys who hit dingers.
The Giambis are brothers, so that doesn't count. That's
not. Let's not call Jeremy Giambi a star.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, no.
I mean, Jason Giambi was more of a star than Jeremy was.
Oh yeah, he was. He
Bonds.
Star.
Willie Mays was Barry Bonds' godfather.
Right.
I heard them.
Oh.
What are you trying? I'm confused as to what you're trying to think of right now.
I could be, if I butcher his name, I'm
Alou?
Sorry.
Moises Alou?
Yeah. No.
Because he was a Cub.
Yeah. Was it Alomar Ramirez? What am I thinking of? There was a.
I don't even know what you're trying to get at right now.
But I'm just saying that there was another. There was another father-son duo, but I couldn't. That had played together, and I remember because you know baseball's fucking been around forever,
right?
And I was just like, there was another name like in my head.
Okay.
Aren't there like multiple Lous in baseball?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Either way.
Yeah, the Griffies.
Nice.
Boom. We're tied.
Two points.
Sorry, Steve.
2 points each to you. Steve is still in. Well,
see, thing is,
you're tied for first with two. He's in second place with one.
It's gonna start drifting into college. Like if he has any like college basketball questions, they're all you, man. Like unless they're gimmies, dude. Oh.
There will be questions tailored toward everybody's strength.
Oh, for sure.
Trust me, there will be.
It's like, only fair.
Like last week, everybody knew. Last week, everybody knew the answer. This week, two of you knew the answer. Promise you next week only one of you will know the answer.
You got this Ryan Seacrest thing going on, and I like it. You don't give away whether we're right or wrong, and you actually have me like right up to the very end.
I feel like we're standing in those spotlights.
Yeah, like I'm
on
like
stage.
Like I'm like, it's the great, like I'm really kind of like last week I was like, it's Pat Riley, and then for a while I was like, oh my God, is it Phil Jackson?
Well, I don't want to give it away until
answers. No, you're doing. I'm saying I like it.
No, I know.
You're sea-cresting the shit out of us.
I appreciate that.
And it's
that.
Working. So.
I know. That you did the hold on the answer. And I was
it
like,
is.
How
was
the
like,
fuck did we miss that
I was
question?
Like, dude, I this is embarrassing. Like, if we're starting a sports podcast,
I saw your
going,
faces. I saw your faces, and I was very proud of what I just did.
So nice so work. Good. That's
thank
good.
You.
That's quality hosting. That's good work.
I appreciate the compliment. Seacrest out. all right, so obviously
the madness.
It's March Madness.
The madness.
Guys.
The madness.
So good.
Since, I've been working for all of it.
Since Thursday, the past 4 days have been four of my favorite days in a long time. Yeah. That's just what March Madness is. Christian, where the fuck do we start, dude?
Oh, man.
What?
Well,
we can't cover everything. Let's cover some of the highlights. My first standout, personally,
favorite upset
is,
ooh, upset.
Georgia.
Georgia State.
Georgia State.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So that's a really good one. Not only just because it's a 14 over a 3, which is a rare one.
That's pretty good.
But the way they got there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, the kid Hunter is the
RJ Hunter.
RJ Hunter is the son of the head coach. Who, when they won their conference tournament championship that got them the automatic bids going to the tournament, they had this pile up and they broke their coach's leg.
He ruptured his Achilles.
Injured his leg. So
yeah.
he's in a
Which
swivel chair.
Hurts.
Yeah.
I would assume
oh
so.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. So the dude's in a swivel chair for the tournament and his son hits the game winning three.
I saw
and
that.
His dad, the coach, is so excited he spins
falls
around
out
his swivel chair
and
falls
chair.
Out of
falls
his chair.
Out of his chair.
And it's absolutely fine and like just celebrating while lying flat on his back on the sideline. Great image.
One of the great. I didn't get to watch the game because I was at work, but I got to listen to the call during the game.
Yeah.
And I listened to the call when RJ Hunter hit that shot, and I just erupted in my office chair at work. Like I was, it was. It was just a great add-on to an already fantastic story from like a few days before. It's like I heard that shot go in and I heard the screams from the announcer and I was just like, that's what March Madness is all about. That's why people who don't understand why you follow college basketball will just never get it.
Yeah.
Like if you don't get it, you'll never get it.
Oh yeah.
Well, and it also When you're a fan of college basketball and you like college basketball, which in my mind is just, and I'm, since we've started this podcast, since I've really been focusing on the NBA, my appreciation of the NBA game, where it's at right now, is right back to where it was, you know, when I was 12, you know, 13 years old. That being said, I've always loved college basketball.
Oh yeah,
I you know there are obviously dominant teams, but when you get to the dance,
anything.
Anything goes. No level of talent, no level of raw athleticism. If you've got a team that fits a scheme that plays good basketball, doesn't make any mistakes.
Yep.
And that's what you've been seeing. You've been seeing good, sound basketball. Unfortunately, I haven't been seeing it.
Yeah.
I've been at work, but. You know, it sucks when, like, I'm a huge, I love Gophers basketball.
Sure.
We obviously only made the NIT last year, the not invited tournament, and won it. Obviously, I'm not saying the NIT is a big deal, but when you win the NIT and you've got a new coach.
It's a big step in
the
right direction.
And he's recruiting.
It's a good step.
It's a good step. Expectations are that you should at least make the dance, right? Like
right.
you going in.
The
and
next
so,
year,
for the
yeah.
Gophers, so for the Gophers
should
to
be a
really,
big stepping stone.
So for the Gophers to not really be able to come in and establish themselves, not even make the NIT, and then having to work through the whole thing, it just sucks. But that's exactly what you said, Tyler. Those are the types of moments that make March Madness, one of a kind.
Oh, yeah. Everybody can get on board with that, too. Nobody cares about Georgia State.
No.
But it's just an incredible moment.
Well, it was like Florida Gulf Coast the year before.
Yep, exactly.
It's just,
never heard of them.
It's always an amazing story to watch a mid-major go, like, get past the first round in the tournament because it doesn't happen that often. It's not an everyday occurrence. Like, the odds are always going to be stacked against a mid-major like Georgia State, and for them to come out and play the way that they did and play their hearts out and win that game on a last second shot by their best player, who happens to be the coach's son, which is another storyline for another time. Yeah. Like, but that's just, it's just fantastic. And it's like, it's, I know I just said it's another storyline for another time, but it's important to get at. It's important to know that just because it's not always a bad thing that a player is coached by his father.
Not at all.
And Ron Hunter and RJ Hunter have just proven that.
Yeah.
RJ Hunter is the best player on that team. There is no question. No one will argue differently. The stats show it. The film shows it. Like, he is the best player on that team.
Yeah.
But everyone on that team feels like the son of Ron Hunter because of how he treats his players. He doesn't treat RJ any differently than he treats the 12th person on that bench.
Right.
He treats his team like his family, and that's why they went out and played the way they've been playing.
Right.
And it was heartbreak. It was tough to see them lose yesterday, but no one will ever consider what they've done in the past couple weeks as a failure.
Oh, no you can't. Way. No way. Yeah.
You can't. Oh, it's, yeah. No one will ever argue that they did not do everything that they could to play well and to get where they went, get where they got in this tournament. And that's what March Madness is all about.
And, you know, building off that, this same goes exactly for the other 14-3 upset, UAB.
Exactly.
Alabama Birmingham beating Iowa State, which I was sorry to hear because I do like the Hoibergs.
I love Mr. Hoiberg and his Iowa State team, but that was a great, that was a hard-fought game.
Exactly. But here's the nice thing, because, I mean, I'm sure you guys both saw the big news when UAB earlier this year discontinued their football program.
Right, right.
That city.
Joe Webb went there.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. They were hurting.
They were really. They were hurting. They were in a bad place.
I mean, not to go super off topic. Did you guys see the video that was taken within the room?
The players devastated. Devastated.
Just a heartbreaking. It's a really unfortunate thing when a school's sports program, regardless of if it's football or if it's tennis or lacrosse or bowling or whatever the fuck it is, it's heartbreaking to see a college program get shut down like that. No one ever wants that.
And these are football players in Alabama.
Exactly.
They played at UAB Alabama Birmingham, so they're not stars, but that means a lot to them. So it's great to see something celebrate.
Well, this current class, correct me if I'm wrong, there's like four or five guys that are NFL bound.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, is that right? Oh, I didn't know.
I mean, this is whether they're in a super competitive program or not, this is still it's a breeding ground for NFL prospects. So, but that's neither here nor there. So that being said, with all that kind of devastation, to see this.
Yeah.
At this level for that school.
Yeah, their head coach is a guy named Jared Haas, who was played for Kansas under Roy Williams, and he was an assistant for a long time at Kansas and North Carolina.
Was it Haas or Haas?
I think it's Haas.
Is it?
But basically, I'm familiar with him for years when he was an assistant coach in North Carolina, which is my team.
Gotcha.
I was reading his comments afterwards, and he was just like, they asked him, is this a big deal for your school? I was like, this is a big deal for our city.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone was hurting. Even if we don't, win any other games, which they didn't, UCLA sent him home. But he's like, it was really good for just a day, everybody to feel like, winners. And that was big. And that's another just a beauty of the tournament.
Speaking of UCLA, really quick, good call, bad call, goaltending, day one. What'd you think?
Ugh,
good call.
It's the right call, but it sucks because that ball wasn't going in the hoop, but it doesn't matter. It was going towards the rim, it was on the downward spiral. The guy shouldn't have touched it.
He hit it before it ever hit anything else, and that's a goaltend.
You gotta watch it. I mean,
it's shitty because UCLA should not have won that game.
And then they beat UAB. Now they're in the Sweet 16. Yeah. By the way, their point guard is another coach's son.
Yeah.
Bryce Alford,
yeah.
But
he's the one who took that shot too, right?
Yep. 3 points that he never had to work for, but
wow,
Jesus, it was rough.
Yeah, that was rough. I was able to actually see the end of that game, like live, like on my lunch break, and I just I was stunned at that.
Ugh.
But it was the right call.
I'll tell you,
I've watched it 50 times since. It was the right call.
Real quick tangent: Southern Methodist. They've had two of the crappiest ends to their season, maybe in the history of sports. Because last year they're in the top 25 and still didn't make it into the field of 68.
Yep.
Because they basically the NCAA committee just decided that they hadn't played anybody good. Now this year they lose because of a goaltending on a shot that wasn't going in the basket. It's like, oh my gosh, I would not want to be a Southern Methodist basketball player.
No, sir.
That is rough. But yeah.
Getting past, let's see. I guess we can get past Thursday and go right into, well, I mean, Thursday was one of the greatest first days of the NCAA tournament that I've ever seen.
Five games
ended by 1 point.
Decided by 1 point. Unbelievable.
One overtime game, I believe.
Yep.
Friday was all chalk. Everyone who was supposed to win won.
Right.
So it was like, eh, whatever. Then we get to last night, Saturday.
Yeah. Couple of real good games.
My Butler Bulldogs.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
Against my lovely girlfriend's Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And we just go right down to the fucking wire.
Battle for the Hoosier State. Great game.
Oh, my God. It felt like I was back in 2010 with the Gordon Hayward-led Butler Bulldogs.
Pour one out for Gordon Hayward in that final heave, man. I felt your pain, dude. I felt your pain.
To this day, I can't hear that call and that last shot.
Oh, you mean almost went in? Ugh, I'm with you. I hate Duke, so I couldn't stand it.
I can't hear it without almost crying. I can't hear it without almost crying. But regardless, my Butler Bulldogs getting back to the dance, the way playing the kind of basketball, playing vintage, gritty Butler basketball, which is what I like to see. They grinded out that one against Texas on Thursday. They played. They didn't play all that well until the last 3 or 4 minutes, but when it got down to it, Kellen Dunham hit a big three, and they hit all their free throws, which at the end of the day, that's what Butler's all about. They hit a couple big shots, and they go to the line and hit their free throws, which is what we need to do. We did the same thing against Notre Dame, but...
Notre
Dame was just... They're a scary team. They're a tough team.
They're
on just a freaking tear in the past month right now. Between Pat Connaughton, that freak of a two-sport athlete, who's already, by the way, I don't know if you knew this, he's already, I believe, in the Baltimore Orioles organization. He was drafted in the
fourth round. Oh, I didn't know
that. He throws a 97-mile-an-hour fastball.
I was about to start raving about how much I love Pat Connaughton, but you've given me another reason to like the guy. Gosh, ridiculous.
We drew up a great play at the end of regulation
Get
Kellen Dunham. Kellen Dunham, a three in the corner. I'm thinking it's going in, and Pat Connaughton, out of nowhere, makes one of the greatest defensive stops I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Swats that fucking basketball into the eighth row of seats. It was amazing.
And, I mean, I'll tell you, man, just, from my own personal perspective, watched basketball all my life, played basketball through high school.
Yeah.
There is no way I would ever consider going for a block shot in situation.
You can't.
Foul the guy, you lose the game.
You foul the guy, you lose the game.
And it was all ball. It was perfectly timed. It was clean. It was beautiful.
And then for him to come out of a timeout in overtime and just hit a nasty corner three.
Yep.
And then for Steve Vastoria to follow it up with a nasty corner three to just put the game away.
There was also, for me, the best moment for Connaughton actually wasn't on the floor. It was in the huddle. I don't know if you remember, but there was a moment where Jackson, their point guard, was freaking out because it was such a high emotion game. And Zach August had this really bad double dribble right back.
With 2 seconds left in regulation, that's what led to them drawing up that play to get Kellen Dunham the last second shot.
In the huddle, they're freaking out.
Connaughton
grabs the guy and calms him down. He says, "We're fine." Then he goes back on the court and makes the block.
And then he busts that three.
Yep. Huge game. And him and Jerry and Grant, the two of them are just flat out winners. I've been watching them for the last couple of years in the ACC. They're winners.
It was a fantastic game. Kudos to Notre Dame. But also kudos to Butler.
They played a great
who
game.
Who for the past couple of years since Brad Stevens has left have not been given the kind of credit that they deserve. And they came into this tournament knowing that they could put up a good fight, and they did. They had plenty of opportunities to win that game. Roosevelt Jones is a goddamn monster.
Really good.
Kellen Dunham is a fantastic player.
Yep.
Alex Barlow, it was heartbreaking to see him foul out, but he's just...
He's better than that game.
I put him on the same spectrum as, like, a Ronald Norred or a Shelvin Mack, or... He's one of these guys who just epitomizes what college basketball is.
Right.
He's a consummate professional. He's a great sport. He's a great athlete. He's a great person on and off the court. And it was just it was heartbreaking to see him foul out like the way that he did. But
that was rough.
Just my heart goes out to Butler because they're my team. But man, they deserve a lot more credit than a lot of people give them. I love that team to death.
Yeah.
And I'm not just I'm being a little bit of a homer, but at the same time. And people don't give them enough credit.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree. I mean, listen, Notre Dame, ACC champs, like really, really good team. Butler
coming off
sweat all
coming
the
off
way.
A win against Duke and coming off a win against North Carolina, and for Butler to play the way they did against them, come on.
I mean, Notre Dame had to earn that one, and now Notre Dame has got to earn another one against the winner of my personal favorite non-North Carolina game, because Carolina's my team. But my favorite win today was Wichita State.
Ooh, this game was...
They got the game they wanted. We touched on it last week.
I was going to say, if you listened to us last week, you would have heard Christian and I going like waxing on about if the second round goes correctly, then we get a Wichita State-Kansas game. A matchup we have not seen since... The three of us could barely walk and talk.
Because you said KU refuses
wouldn't
to
play
them. Which
they wouldn't give them the rivalry game. Because
they, quote, didn't think it would... Basically, didn't think it would benefit them in any way.
Well, Here's what Bill Self said. His official reason, because I looked this up before the game.
Yeah.
I wanted to have my stuff in line for tonight. Bill Self's comment was... I want to play non-conference games in big cities like New York, like Boston, like Los Angeles because they're recruiting grounds, which is a crock of crap because...
He was scared.
The idea that Kansas can't sell itself to recruits is utterly ridiculous. And you can still play all those games and schedule an in-state rival on your home court if you want.
The thing is, correct me if I'm wrong, Kansas is a basketball state. I mean, that's that's
they
what
don't
it
have
is.
Anything
that,
else.
I mean, there's plenty
of talent.
They're
not big on football.
There's plenty of talent within state, which is, I'm sure, correct me if I'm wrong, that's probably how Wichita State's been able to make its way, you know, because kids want to go play there.
Yeah.
So if you can't build within and you want to, you should go play Wichita State, beat them, and then you can get your kids that way. You shouldn't have to travel to Boston, New York and do it if you're really that good.
And there's all this history, too, between the teams. I mean, Tyler, you saw this watching the game.
Yep.
They were showing all these pictures from these kids from Wichita State and Kansas who played on the same high school team.
Perry Ellis for Kansas and Evan Wessel for Wichita State played on the same team. Baker was on the AAU team, yep.
Yeah, so it's like three guys from Wichita State and Kansas play together for 4 years.
So Bill Self
is
BS.
BS.
Bullshit.
They were scared. Wichita State's been trending
not
upward.
A coincidence.
So anyway, they got the game they wanted. Wichita State took out Indiana and met them. And Wichita State took Kansas to the woodshed.
Took it to them. Kansas
it was beautiful.
Kansas was up 24-16 with about 5 minutes left in the first. They were in control.
Yep.
Wichita State went on a 15-2 run.
Yep.
And just never looked back. Evan Wessel could not miss.
Yep. And he's not a shooter.
He's not.
Of, he's like a grinds it out guy who doesn't show up in the stat sheet.
He hit four threes in that second half and just, they were all daggers.
Yep. Van Vliet jumped on Mason and fouled him out.
Van Vliet was fucking phenomenal, dude.
Yeah. I hate that I had to work. It sucks. I missed all of the good stuff.
It was an absolutely phenomenal game. And Chris and I were discussing this before the game, but I want to get you on the record for saying this. So you and I discussed, what does this mean now? Wichita State won, and they didn't win on a last second shot. They didn't get a lucky call.
They were the flat out better team.
They were the flat out better team.
It wasn't about foul trouble.
What does this mean for next season? The game has to be scheduled, right?
It has to be. I mean, unless, because here's the thing. We're hammering Kansas pretty hard here, but KU really does have a lot of pride.
Yeah.
I think there is no way they get slammed with the label of ducking somebody who then finally kicked their ass. They're going to schedule a game. They will play Wichita State. I'm guessing it's going to be an Allen Fieldhouse in Lawrence,
yes,
a KU's home court.
I'm of the opinion they should play two games.
Oh, wow.
They need to play in Kansas, and they need to play
over in Wichita.
Yes.
Oh, two in the same season.
Yes. Are you kidding me?
Oh, wow. Oh, that'd be
weird. So are they?
Why does one team get the advantage over the other at this point?
I'm sure they just do a multiple year thing, like a home and home.
Oh, okay, all right.
Because they're not in the same conference.
That's what I'm saying. Because you can't. Yeah. What other team does that?
I would just do what Kentucky and Louisville does. Why not?
Yeah.
Just, you know, one year you do it in Lawrence, one year you do it in Wichita, the next year you do it in Lawrence, next year in Wichita, and just so on.
I guess
just
my
do
feeling,
it. Make it regular.
I guess my feeling on it is just that Kansas. I think it would be really, like, I don't know if cowardly is the right word, but if Kansas loses by 13 in the NCAA tournament and then schedules a game next year, but schedules it in their home stadium, that doesn't make them more reputable for scheduling that game if they're automatically scheduling it in their home court.
It's true, but I think they wouldn't just do the one game. I think they'd schedule like at least a 2-year deal.
That's usually how it works.
That's what Kentucky and Carolina did.
But
the
first one should be at Wichita State's home court then.
I think Kansas has a little bit more leverage on that just because here's the thing. Wichita State wants to play them because Kansas gets the TV deals. KU is
Kansas
always
has been
on
game
TV.
Longer.
They've always been on TV. They get the deals. Wichita State wants exposure, so I think
that's fine. They got exposure. They
got exposed, is what they got. But you know,
well, I mean, Wichita State got exposure. They got exposure by kicking the shit out of Kansas today.
Right.
And Bill Self should be he should be wanting that game no matter what, so that people don't call him a coward next year.
Because
if he doesn't schedule a game with Wichita State, I will come on this podcast for every single week for the next year of college basketball and call him a fucking coward.
Because
that's
you.
What he will be.
Yeah, and I got to say, you know, and this actually brings up another thing. I mean, Kansas right now, Kansas is not looking so great, for one thing, because, you know, all this hype, I'm sure you saw it too, Drew, like, you know, Kansas just won, I think, their 13th consecutive Big 12 or 10th or 11th, whatever it was, double-digit consecutive regular season Big 12 championship. And the Big 12 right now has gotten absolutely waxed.
Absolutely
in the tournament.
Murdered.
And then they run into an in-state mid-major rival and they get slaughtered.
So my
Big 12 looks soft. Kansas looks soft. They need to schedule competition. They can't look like they're running away.
Absolutely.
Question to you guys, don't know much about it, is this the first step in a series of steps in which Wichita State forces its way into the Big 12?
Interesting.
I hadn't even thought of
because
that.
Because I agree with you. I think that Wichita State should. They absolutely, from what I know of college basketball and what I know of that conference and what Wichita State's done, in looking at the body of work for the last 3 or 4 years, been a hell of a ball club.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Obviously, the competition.
One of the five best in America.
Well, absolutely. So obviously, and like you said, gaining exposure. Obviously, this is a place where kids want to play. Definitely in-state.
Easy.
If you want Wichita State the opportunity to play Kansas twice and at least have the opportunity, because like he says, I mean, I don't know much about college basketball, but I for the most part, I feel like I got a pretty good handle on college sports. Ain't no team that's a part of one of the power conferences, even if they get beat in a big way, whatever, there's no way they're going to that team's house. There's just no way. You're going to make you come to them regular season.
You're right, but I disagree.
Oh, that's totally not the way.
I disagree with the mindset.
I completely agree with you on that.
I just don't think Kansas would do it.
Exactly. We're both with you.
No, and you're right. Kansas wouldn't do it. I think to keep the respect that they've garnered over the past few years with Bill Self, the right thing to do is to play one and one.
Yeah, I don't know. Especially
after 22 years of not scheduling the game.
Yeah.
You need to play two.
This is the exact same thing. This has happened before in the 80s. For years and years and years, Kentucky refused to play Louisville, and it's the exact same incident. It's another in-state school trying to go after the flagship university of the state of Kentucky. Kentucky played Louisville in the tournament. Louisville kicked their butts. Louisville went to the Final Four. Kentucky scheduled the rivalry game. That's just how it worked.
Yep.
Kansas should do the same.
Agreed.
So my question to you guys, being avid college basketball followers.
Big 12?
Well, I'm just saying in general, does this happen in college where two in-state rivals play each other twice a year, even though they're out of conference?
No,
and they no go, okay, it doesn't happen. I'm saying it should happen. It should be the exception to the rule. Just because of the amount. Just because of how Kansas has acted,
yeah,
they've acted like there's just no reason whatsoever to play the Shockers.
Right.
And Shockers shocked them by just kicking their fucking asses today. Yeah.
No, absolutely.
In my opinion, I know this is not how the college basketball system works, but in my opinion, Kansas needs to make it up to them for the past 22 years of disrespect.
Right. And so that basically poses my second question. Is this the first step in a series of steps in which Wichita State starts forcing themselves into the Big 12?
I don't think so. Because for starters, it's a couple of things. Only if they would do basketball, and even only basketball.
Right.
And even then, I'm not so sure. Wichita State is not a big school as far as other sports go.
If it's not the Big 12, could it be anywhere else?
I mean, where they're coming from actually isn't a bad conference.
The Missouri Valley is a pretty good conference.
Basketball or in all sports?
Basketball. But they don't have the money to keep up with the other Big 12 schools. They couldn't transport
their teams that far.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like they won't wind up in the Big 12. What they would want to do is schedule a proper rivalry game against
them. And every other year thing would be way better for both teams, to be honest with
you. Well, in every
year. Everybody would watch. It'd be like, I would watch. I don't know anything about this, but now that I would watch.
Kansas has kind of got a little bit of a dearth of rivalries now that Missouri bounced out of the Big 12.
Right.
The border war is over. Why don't they just fight the guys in their state who are better than them?
Especially since they've been fixing for it and they got it when they needed it the most. You might as well let them have it. If you really... I mean, again, don't know enough about it, but if I'm Bill Self, I'm thinking, at the very least, you gotta go play them.
Yeah.
You gotta go play them.
They gotta play them once at least.
You want to keep any sense of respectability,
dignity.
You have to go play them.
Yeah, man.
No, it's a tough loss.
You shy away from another year after a 13-point loss in the round of 32 to Wichita State, a team you haven't played in 22 years.
It's going to be hard to
play them.
Well, it's going to be
hard. You have to go play them.
It's going to be hard to get kids in state to want to come play for you. I mean, granted, you don't have anything to worry about because the kid that, you know, friggin' went first overall the year before was in friggin' Toronto.
I guarantee. So. I promise you that game took two recruits from the next 2 or 3 years and shifted them from wanting to go to Kansas to wanting to go to Wichita State.
Well, even borderline.
Maybe not like top five recruits that like Kansas would get, but like
solid mid-tier
role player recruits. Yeah. They're like, hey, I could go be a star at Wichita State. I could go be an Evan Wessel at Wichita State. Fuck yeah. Yeah. Let's do that.
Even borderline states. And I know this because I'm a Minnesota guy, but this is, you see it all the time in college sports. Like, Minnesota kids will go play in Wisconsin because they win.
Right. Yeah.
They just run their programs better.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
If you're balling in Kansas, you might go play, and you don't get the game that that you should get, it's like, fuck it, I'm gonna go play at Wichita State.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I don't want to take up too much more time, but let's just roll real quickly through the last couple highlights.
Wisconsin, still standing,
Wisconsin's still going strong. They just finished out Oregon tonight.
Got Frank my heels the Tank, next.
Yeah, exactly. Frank the Tank didn't look great.
Nope.
Did not look good.
He didn't.
But
he got posterized.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he didn't play a good game. He couldn't get anything on the perimeter. He couldn't dribble the ball. He couldn't. He got worked tonight. He got worked by Oregon. But luckily, you got Nigel.
Yep.
You got Bronson. You got all those guys.
And they're still doing all this without Trayvon Jackson,
exactly,
who might be back for the Sweet 16,
which would be huge for them.
Be huge. Another really good
sure-handed. I'm still picking them.
Guard.
They're going to the Final Four, I think. Unless your heels can
yeah, I mean,
can
they,
shut down those guys. Shut down that big three.
That's
if gonna, you will.
You know, I got to say, I think along with Wichita State, Notre Dame, that's going to be the best Sweet 16 game.
Agreed.
Because North Carolina is, they're a flawed team. They make a lot of mistakes. I think they're 1 year away from being a genuine national championship contender.
Yeah.
But what they do have is a really big-time player, Marcus Paige, who dropped 20 second-half points against Arkansas. And they've also just got a lot of big athletic bodies. They love to get out in transition. And they actually play pretty good defense as far as a North Carolina team goes. Carolina's been historically allergic to defense under Roy Williams. These guys actually do defend. And if they just muscle Wisconsin, who's, let's face it, they're not as athletic as some teams. Mm-hmm. That could be a good game. I still think Wisconsin wins, and then they'd probably have another hard game against Arizona, but they're my pick to win it all. That hasn't changed, but if they get through Carolina, it's probably a dogfight.
Kentucky. That's my question to you two.
Well, they've crapped on everybody so far. Cincinnati gave them a bit of a fight, but not a real scare. They shut it down. I mean, nobody has shown that Kentucky's not going home before
the
Final Four.
Well, that's the thing. The thing is, now you got to really, if you're like me and you bet them not to go perfect, and you bet them not to go, you know, all the way undefeated, you're just hoping that one of the guys that you pick to do it doesn't get upset on the way there. Because
right.
I want them to stick around so
they can
do it.
What I will say is this. I mean, to me, looking at this stuff, I mean, the teams that are left, I mean, you know, Virginia was one of the contenders that has now dropped out. Virginia's gone. Michigan State took him out.
Tom Izzo, dude. That guy can fucking coach.
Yep.
Also, Virginia just can't score.
They can't score. I think watching that game made it very clear. Virginia couldn't actually
18 first-half points? Come the fuck on.
Terrible.
You're not going to win a game against a Tom Izzo
hideous Malcolm
team.
Brogdon was a non-factor.
Nothing.
I mean, except for Atkins, nobody on Virginia should.
That Trice kid is good. What's his name?
Travis Trice.
Oh,
Travis Trice. Yeah.
Damn.
That's the thing. He can do that, but he can also vanish. Like he's really hot and cold. He got hot at the right time.
Yes, sir.
But I mean, the thing is, as far as, you know, on the other side of the bracket, I think only Duke can beat Kentucky. I think whoever comes out of the West is Kentucky's biggest challenge. Whether that's Wisconsin, whether that's Arizona, or whether that's Carolina just getting hot at the right time. Wisconsin's my pick for that. Arizona's
mine
my
too.
Second. But it's, you know, either one of those teams gives Kentucky a hard game, a really hard game. But you're right, they could get upset, and you never know. So, yeah.
Well, I wish I could say we're going to be watching March Madness tomorrow, but we're not, sadly.
Ugh.
We are on hiatus until Thursday. That's what I hate about the end of the first weekend of this tournament, is that we have to wait 3 days to watch more basketball. Perfect. But it's gonna be a great Thursday, and I'm very excited for it.
I'm early out and from work, so I can see us take the Badgers on.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
I can.
That's gonna be a great game.
Darn those expensive tickets. I'd have gone.
Switch shifts, because I gotta see this stuff.
I'm gonna try to leave like 45 minutes early from work just so I can get home to watch a couple games. So, with that, that's another episode, guys. I don't know if we'll be back on Wednesday, just because I don't know what there's really going to be to talk about.
Right now, madness is basically dominating.
Yeah, but there's... We've,
won't be any
we've
games.
Yeah, there's going to be no games till Thursday, so...
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. There's madness going on,
yeah,
and
exactly.
Unless something super big happens here...
So, unless something insane sports-wise happens, we will be back on... Not Wednesday, but we'll be back on Sunday, the 29th. We'll be back next Sunday on 29th. Christian, Going to be here again?
Yes, sir.
All right, yes.
Cool. We're going to have more March Madness to talk about.
Sweet 16 and Elite Eight? I'm not going
to
miss that.
Going to have a lot to talk about. Obviously, we'll continue with our trivia, and obviously we'll continue with any other important sports news that we have, but right now it just seems like it's all about the dance, and that is A-okay with me.
Nothing wrong with that. Best season in all of sports.
But actually, now that I think about it, Drew and I are going to figure this out. Stay tuned, because Drew and I are going to have an opening day podcast, because baseball is about to be upon us, and us division rivals could not be more excited about it.
I don't even care that my team's lost 90 games in the last four seasons. I have hope. Let's do it.
And I have hope, too. Let's go Twins. Let's go White Sox. But more, let's go White Sox. All right, guys. For Christian.
Thank you for having me. Always glad to share in the madness.
For Drew Willers.
Thank you guys for listening. Like, listen, share, all that good stuff.
Go Sox. I'm Tyler. We'll see y'all next week.